Welcome, guys, to the Codes Podcast. We are on our week four, getting some momentum here. Our goals are to hit 100 together, Alex and I, and we're almost at our 10 and more six, so not really. But welcome to the podcast, guys. Thanks for listening.
Welcome.
I'm here. My name is Ryan Vera. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Alex Wolf. Mr. Wolf.
Good to be here.
And today we pick topics every week back and forth. You know, when you start something, it's nice to start and flow and then learn as you go, get feedback as we do. But Alex suggested we pick a topic each week, kind of what comes up in our life or things that we talk about amongst ourselves that are not too deep, not yet. We decided we wanted to talk about lessons today. What is a lesson? Is it a school lesson? Is it something that, what is a lesson to us? When we go to school, we have lessons. When is the first time we actually learn about what a lesson is? The word lesson. When do you think we learn about lessons, Alex? Like what, when we're a little kid, we learn our lesson from, you know, getting hurt? Or is it something we go to school and learn the lessons? Where's that energetic?
Yeah, it seems like it could be an array of topics with lessons. It's pretty broad. And it starts, I believe, as a kid, you know, mm-hmm. and I don't think it ever really stops, as far as I could tell. There's mm-hmm. constantly just new lessons seem to be being implemented in our lives, in my life for sure. And lessons for me definitely started as a kid. My dad and I had a real bond as a kid about learning lessons. And he even had a saying that he would say to me, that he said, "Let that be a lesson to you, son," you know, and that one, it still rings very true in my heart. Anytime a lesson comes up, it reminds me of my dad, wanting to teach me that lesson. My dad didn't teach me that many skills, but he definitely taught me the skill of how to learn a lesson mm-hmm. and then not repeat that mistake, which is, I believe, is part of the lesson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that. Repeat. Yeah, it's we do learn a lesson. What I'm noticing with my son and mother, and I'm father, is that we interact with our son very differently. You know, I like him learning lessons. Like the other week, we have a Bengal cat, and our Bengal cat is, you know, there's nice ones and there's brave ones, and he's kind of a brave one, more on the wild side. And my son was pulling his tail pretty hard. And he got scratched him on the face.
Wow.
And he made him bleed. And it was right wow. down by his eye and then wow. right on his lip.
Wow.
And like that was, you know, you think that's a lesson for your son. You know, it's a lesson for me as well. But he healed up in 2 days. The breast milk heals you right up. But like that's a lesson like for him that I'm seeing him like really how he learned from this lesson is now he grabs like a toy, like a spatula or something and a pillow, and he like backs up to Kin and he starts to hit him with the pillow and the wow. spatula, and then he ducks. So you don't pull the tail again, or be prepared when you pull the tail next time. Right. Anyways, that's off topic, but yeah, between like a father and mother, she's I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but I saw this I don't even know who this was. We always see these gurus talking on Instagram reels and they sound really good. But there was this old guy talking about like the mother is like the coach and the father is like the judge, right? So it's like mother is very teaching loving and trust and everything. And then I'm kind of like, let him fall, you know, let him learn his lesson. So he has that interpretation. So he has that clean feedback before it's interrupted with narrative or stories or fear. So the next time he's like, I don't want to feel that. Or the next time, does he choose to interact in a different way when that comes, you know, and take that lesson forward? And then going back to when we first started to talk about this, lessons that you learn as a child, I would say, are experiential lessons. It's something that you experience and then you learn from. And then when you go to get into school, they call it school lessons, or like piano lessons, or guitar lessons, or martial arts. You're more of I guess when it comes to an art like martial arts, you're learning from people that have mastered something, and then they've created a curriculum to go through certain levels the best they can to not only experience but study the practice, so that they can pass down these greater lessons and teachings. And then this is really like, you know, when we're coming into the world, when we're young and we're growing up, we learn to both experience lessons and also prepare and study them. And I remember there was an experiment with mice or something, and or kids. I don't know, mice or kids, doesn't matter. But the point of the experiment, you know, because they all, you know, stories change, was that the kids learned the best by doing, you know, by experiencing, by doing what they were doing rather than watching. Yeah, there was one where they were watching, and then there's one where they read about it and then tried to do it. And then there's one that actually learned by doing it. And then these are kind of like the third dimensional or the physical reality structures of how we would learn life lessons, you know, the greater life lessons. So if the lesson is love, or the lesson is trust, right? Let's say that your lesson is trust. You might not know that lesson is trust, but you have a desire somewhere to learn trust. So you have these events come up to learn trust. You go through the lesson. Mm. And do you pass the lesson? If you don't pass the lesson, you got to do it again. It just repeats the lessons, right? So what do you think, Alex, stops you from having to repeat the lesson? On both like a level of being a child, being in school, and the greater lessons when you grow up. Like, what do you think the code is there to not do the lesson over again?
For me, I would say if I'm keep repeating a lesson, Ryan, is that what you're asking? What is making me keep repeat it? Is that the question?
Yeah, I mean, I would even say that if you notice you're repeating the lesson, you got a major code there. Like that's completely interrupting. But I would say like, what would be the definition of like completing that lesson and not having to repeat it, right? Like, but what would you do? What would be the code to, I just kind of gave part of it away, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say that once the lesson is complete, you got a code out of it that you now have a new perspective or a new wisdom, and you know what works and what doesn't work. And it's kind of like an enlightening process where now you've embodied that lesson. Mm. And that's the changing point. And then to go back to what I think you were asking was, if it keeps repeating, what is happening there, that what is has happened? And I would say there's something that hasn't been felt, or there's something that hasn't been processed enough to really learn it, and there's maybe a bypass mechanism going on or something. Mm. Or an avoidance pattern. Mm. to go through this lesson. Mm-hmm. Probably because it's really uncomfortable or maybe painful, and there could be suffering involved. But from my experience, it would be that I'm avoiding feeling a certain pain or suffering, or just an uncomfortable feeling. Maybe it's not even that painful. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just a feeling. And then really have to go through that most times. Sometimes I could learn just from other people's mistakes and other people's lessons, which is pretty cool. But for me, most of the times I had to go through it myself. And I'd be like, I could do it differently than this person. Even if I saw their lesson happen, I'd be like, I'm different. I could pull this off. And most times I was wrong. I was incorrect.
Yeah, it seems like there's both an individual lesson and a collective lesson. So it's funny that when you talk to people, you get into communities or groups, you realize like, hey, this guy's got a very similar solution or situation or problem or lesson that I do at different levels. It's like learning from other people's mistakes is definitely wisdom, you know. Mm-hmm. It's something that's intelligent. And it's like, you know, Billy went down the left path and got eaten by a tiger. You know, I'm not going to go down there. Mm-hmm. If I go down there, right, in the way of my son, he's going to bring a weapon. But yeah, and you mentioned one other thing that I was really hoping that you would say is embodiment. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people have an intention to embody something, and they'll go to a certain course or into a certain community, and they'll study whatever they're trying to embody, which means they obviously like notice that they have some sort of desire or something, like some sort of code missing in their interactions, right? Mm-hmm. And a true embodiment is something that you hold and practice, right? And you embody things through lessons. You embody things through learning. Like if you wanted to learn trust, you would go through multiple lessons in your life, with relationships, with business, with, you know, things that you do yourself, until you actually learned to trust. Until you learn to trust different aspects of yourself, you learn to trust, then you embody that aspect, that skill, and then you can actually host that for other people to reflect from you. You know, because it's nice in this video game of life. You're going and seeking trust, and this is just an example because it's something I think everyone can relate to at some level, but you're going around and seeking trust in the video game and the video game of life, and you're going and you're creating all these lessons for you to learn trust, learn trust, learn trust. And then there's this anomaly that walks by your path to help. You could say it's like the universe or the reality trying to help. And you walk by somebody that's really already embodied that, you know, or maybe his parents passed down like the embodiment skill of trust, and your reflection is in the interaction with them gives you a code. Mm-hmm. Because like all the other 10 people and all the other 10 lessons that you consistently learn and attract yourself, you know, give you these difficulties of trying to learn trust, and nobody really showed you how to do it. So it's kind of like when you come into this world, you don't have an instruction manual. And then you meet somebody that actually embodies this aspect, and it's how they respond, like we talked the last podcast, and how they interact with things and their energy. And then you kind of tap into that frequency. And now you have a little code that was passed by somebody else through interaction, through experience, to apply as a tool in your lessons. So the importance of like these collective lessons that we learn is that we not only do it for ourselves. Like when somebody learns the embodiment of trust or worthiness or cooperation or something, they actually carry that, and they constantly have to practice it because they're still going to be tested, and they're still going to be everyday life for them to continue to practice that, to be, uh-huh. you know, a complete, you know, like a well, a human, you know. I think to be human is to be able to, you know, mastery is a big word for us, but to be human is to be able to also learn and fail and have these lessons, but continually be effective in what we do, and it be effective in how we respond. And collectively, as we embody these things ourselves, as we embody the lessons, we hold them to be available for others, and we cross paths. Like I know you have, because I've heard your stories, but I've crossed paths with specific mentors and people where they didn't hold all the codes, but they held a certain frequency. And I learned a lot from them just from one interaction or multiple interactions. And I was able to take these lessons plus these energetic codes and start to play with them in the lessons that I created myself. What do I do if I respond this way? What do I do? What did they do? You know, and then we play until we find it, until we find the golden goose. Like, hey, that worked. It released a certain type of energy, right? I know you had a really special mentor that you've told me about many times, and he sounds quite amazing. And is there anything that you could bring from him in a specific way on maybe what I was talking about, the embodiment of certain lessons or how to apply them? Is there something you can tap into there? I'm sure the listeners would love to hear it, because I did.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. It's funny, when you're writing that down, I wrote down mentors and then you brought it up. So it's really cool. I was really fortunate, for the listeners that don't know me, I was really fortunate to have a mentor in my 30s. His name was Spade. And Spade was a once in a lifetime human being. He was incredibly, incredibly intelligent, like book smart intelligent, as well as super creative. He was a painter. He was a musician. He was a DJ. He was an artist. So he had both sides of his brain going in coherence at all times. Maybe not at all times, but he was definitely able to tap into both sides of his brain. He was also incredibly spiritual. He would meditate for hours on end each day. He would do, what's it called? Qigong, and these practices, and was very fluid in his body. He was in incredible shape as well. Incredible cardio. He was incredible. And he was older than me. You know, he was 60 years old, close to 60, when he passed away. But prior to him passing away, him and I became very close. We would hang out every day for years, and I got to learn a lot of his teachings, a lot of his wisdoms, and he did teach me a lot of codes that I still practice today, and we'll get into those codes down the road for sure. But when it comes to actual lessons that he taught me, the one that was coming up, Ryan, was to really appreciate people while they're here, because we just don't know how long they will be here or not. That was a lesson that I got from him, obviously, because he passed away. And I actually got to spend the last 2 weeks of his life with him before he died. So that was really special, because it was right at the end of his life. So it just really taught me the value of appreciation and lesson, like, you know, this is temporary, like, in at least in this vessel, at least in this body, it's temporary. I don't know for sure what happens after. I would guess that there's life after, and it'd be a good educated guess. But he really taught me to just value people on a whole other level, because it's temporary, and friendship, true friendship, is rare. And he showed me a different level of friendship, where, you know, he was all in. Any type of support, physical support, mental, emotional, spiritual support as a friend, he was there more than I had ever experienced up to that point in my life. And I consider myself a good friend with lots of great friendships over the years. So for me, that's a really strong statement. But he brought friendship to a whole other level. And he showed me how valuable mentorship is as well. Because, like you said, there's these, you know, I won't say masters, but could be some are really masters and gurus, or, you know, but, you know, he showed me that it's all about self-mastery, and it's all about becoming your own guru, not to give your power to someone else, but to, if you show up and you're willing to listen and, you know, come prepared for that lesson. Like if you look at it like a martial arts lesson, or a flying lesson, or a, you know, a skydiving lesson, or a driving lesson, like if you show up prepared to that container and really present and ready to learn and put your ego aside, you're opening yourself up to really download and absorb this knowledge. And so that was a big step, and listening was a big part of that, because if I was talking too much, then I wouldn't be able to listen what was actually being transmitted. And that was a big, big part of the lesson. And then I would say the third part of it is to, if for someone out there that's looking for a mentor or looking for a teacher or a master, is really taking the advice from someone where they have the codes of where you want to be in life. For the most part, because that means they've embodied it. They've done it, you know, and sure, there's people that could be like, okay, don't do what I did, cause you'll end up here. And that could be very valuable as well. But there's something really valuable about getting coached from someone where you really want to be, or getting lessons from someone where you really want to be in life, cause they're living examples of it. Mm-hmm. So that was I'd say, you know, that's a long way of saying it, but he taught me a lot. But appreciation was a big lesson that I learned from Spade.
Mm-hmm. And it shows right now you're talking about him, you know, and you do, that is definitely something that you do hold. And it's very interesting it's very special. It's kind of a human thing to be able to pass things along. You know, Spade came and did his cycle. He had many contracts, you know, sold contracts that he completed. And now we're talking about him. Mm-hmm. You know, and that embodiment is a frequency that's handed down through people that have gone through it. And I'm sure Spade wasn't born with it. He might have been born with certain abilities, but you know, I would say I'm in my 40s, we're in our 40s, that you know, decades of experience and ups and downs and looking at lessons and going through them gets you to a place where you are embodying something, you know. And as long as you're not making it noisy, you know, as long as you're staying clean and walking on the path, you're always able to continue to learn, mm-hmm. right? To continue to move forward. And I like the aspect, obviously, in another podcast, we're going to dive into the code of discernment. I think that's a very, very powerful tool that should be learned very young to carry on. It gives you the eyes, you're able to see. One of the first, I think, is one of the best codes out there. It's the first codes that anyone should ever learn. But discernment that I have from teachers and masters and people you learn from, and also being open to that, you can learn from anybody. I can learn from a child crossing the street and somebody I've never met. There's always something to learn from everyone, because everyone is, you know, unique and important in their own way as an individual. Mm-hmm. One of the things I look for in a good teacher is do they teach me to give my power away? Do they teach me to give my power to them? Mm. Do I need to rely on them or outside information? That's one of the discerning things. Or do they teach me how to, you know, keep my power and start to build these tools so that I'm able to, you know, navigate and discover and adjust in life? Mm. And really, like you say, like, you don't know, we don't know what happens after life. And life is temporary. It kind of coincides perfectly with lessons, right? Mm-hmm. If we're here temporary, we're here to learn lessons. Maybe we're here, you know, the way I look at it is that we are an embodied consciousness, but we have different levels of consciousness, mm-hmm. and what people would call a higher self. I don't like the term higher self because it feels elusive. It feels like it's always higher up, like we're chasing a carrot on a stick. Mm-hmm. We have a different level of consciousness, and you can say we have this higher level. Some people call it, well, not many people call it, but it could be a super conscious. Mm. This is like an aspect of our soul, mm-hmm. right? And maybe the soul and in our bodied consciousness has desires to learn multiple lessons in our 60 years of being Spade, or 40 years of being Alex Wolf, or 41 years of being Ryan Vera. Mm-hmm. And the whole point of life is to discover and adjust as life unfolds unpredictably and learn and embody these lessons. And then you get to pass them down by hosting them to the rest of everyone. And the cleaner we get at this, and the clearer we get, more coherent, like you mentioned, both sides of the brain, in this messy, messy world, it's a very, very noisy world. You know, there's a lot of stuff trying to take our attention. It's a war on attention right now.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a pretty tough video game level, I would say. You know, there's a lot going on all the time. There's a monetary system that's changing. You got these very small percent of people pulling strings and this and that, and all, we can all see it, we can all feel it. Mm-hmm. And, it's a tough video game. But through that, you know, when I see something tough, I know that even though it's going to be tough, it's going to lead to a lot of growth and embodiment. And sometimes the biggest lessons that I remember in my life have led to the biggest growth in me, mm-hmm. and the growth that I've always been able to go back to. So, you know, like when you learn your lessons and you go through something and things get a little chaotic, you can always tap in to those experiences. You know, like times in my life, I've dealt with death in my life. You know, I've had very good friends pass away. I had two friends pass away within 2 weeks. Right, both different, you know, and understanding and what that is, and the temporary aspect of life and how I handled it then, and looking at life, they all lead to something I can always tap into now and understand. And then also, like, you know, drinking ayahuasca, you know, you're practicing the cycle of life and death there, you know. Yeah. You're tapping into the spirit world, and you're you know, some circles, event circles, you know, it's the end of life. Sometimes people go then. They you know, or they wish their loved ones that part. But I know my maestro is also spoke about, you know, we drink ayahuasca to prepare ourselves for when we leave too. Mm-hmm. It's a little off topic, but it's something that we interact with, and you know, it's something that that I appreciate. Mm-hmm. What else did I write down here?
Well, you brought up a lot there, Ryan. Let me prod a little bit. You know, we started off with, I'd love to hear some of the biggest lessons that you've learned since we're on the topic of lessons, and mm-hmm. how, you know, I would consider you a pretty embodied human being. So obviously you've learned some big lessons along the way. What are some of the, you know, two or three big lessons that you're comfortable sharing here?
I'm comfortable. So the first thing that comes up is when I was 15 years old, I left home, mm-hmm. you know, on my own. I had to get my own place. I had to, you know, find my own way. I came from a broken family. Mm-hmm. And, 41 now, 25 years ago, 26 years ago, that's something I always tap into, because I had to kind of take care of myself. And I couldn't really rely on anyone, mm-hmm. Except myself. And I really learned through all of my times there that I needed to like rely on myself and also trust, I know we did a thing about trust, and there's times where you can trust yourself and not trust yourself. So it's kind of a heavy term.
For sure.
And, but I learned what the correct way of trusting myself is. And this is an energetic, and, you know, I brought this into, you know, skydiving, and there was Panama where I was getting on top of a Cessna. I think it was a 206, 182. I can't remember, but the plane kind of, stalled. We were doing a stunt and I got dropped in the jungle in Panama, and, it was pretty hairy there. And I remember I crashed, and I found a place where I crashed, and I really injured my leg, and I split my head open, and I had to get like 13 or 14 stitches finally. But it, you know, it was
hit hot. A tree or,
well, the plane, I had like 200 skydives, and I was with my Russian friend, and you know, we were pretty brave then. You know, we weren't really concentrating on navigation. We wanted to do this stunt and crawl onto the top of the wing of the airplane. And you as a pilot already know this is like ridiculous to do. So anyways, I got up there, and then he got up there, and the plane started acting super weird. The propeller stalled in the sky, and the pilot kept flying straight into the mountains instead of turning around like the original plan. He was pretty sweet too, because you know the parachutes those guys have are like round parachutes, like those super thin ones. And the plane, when my friend had got on top, the plane went sideways like this. So like I was on one wing, and I was actually pointed to the wing is pointed to the ground, the other one is pointed directly up to the sky. So I jumped, and I didn't have much altitude. I think I pulled at under 3,000 feet. Usually in a skydive, you pull at 35. You have lots of time. And then the winds were crazy. I had no windsock. And I look around, and it's all jungle everywhere. It's just everywhere. So I'm like, okay, nobody's coming to save me, you know? So I tapped into like, you know, the really challenging, hard times I had leaving home early in the lessons. Like, okay, all I got is me. So what that did is it just cleared the noise. It just cleared. There was no like hoping for anything. There's a fighter pilot says hope is not a strategy. Mm-hmm. So I really just focused. I felt as much as I did. I looked around. I remember I did a course where I could make the plane of the parachute of the wing a little bit higher up like this, so I'd get more distance. Anyways, I eventually found this like clearing on top of this hillside. And I was coming down. I was like, okay, I'm going to try to land there. And I was coming down, and the winds were pretty heavy. They were like 30 miles an hour, 30 knots. And I had a tailwind behind me, so it was actually pushing me. So I don't know how it's like much faster 15 miles an hour coming down. And I get closer and I see this barbed wire fence on top in the middle of the jungle with some farmer's place. So I couldn't flare. But it's interesting that because I didn't flare, I hit the top of the mountain under this big grass. There was these giant boulder rocks. I hit those. So I started rolling, split my head open, and stopped just before the other side of the barbed wire fence, which had a cliff down the end. So I just made it. It's Fahrenheit, 110 degrees out, and super hot. I remember getting up and checking myself, stepping on my foot. I couldn't step on my foot. Black and blue, scraped up, blood. There's a big giant opening in the back of my head, and my parachute was like pulling me from the wind. So this time I really had to tap into, nobody's coming to get me. Like literally, nobody knows where I am. Good luck seeing my parachute there. And I really tapped into this. And I remember at the time I was practicing long meditations during that time of my life where, you know, I'd do anywhere from 4 to 8 hour meditation, uncomfortable, like a Zen style meditation.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I just completely accepted everything I was doing. And there was an energy I tapped into, and I completely accepted that I was the only one that was going to get me where I needed to go. So I made a splint on my leg. I ripped up my t-shirt. I wrapped up my parachute, wrapped up my head. And I started, you know, I climbed up this tree the best I could to see which way to go. I saw the ocean, and I just trekked into the ocean down these sharp hills, like literally like a sloth, like one little step at a time. I think it was 3.5 hours. And this farmer, I was walking through his farmer's field. He found me, this gringo that landed in his field with a parachute. And I remember they gave me, he didn't have any water. He gave me a Fresca, and I drank that shit so fast. And my throat was burning, but I was just so thirsty and happy. But anyways, like I really learned, like from when I was young, leaving home to wherever I ended up there, to really tap in and not, you know, in my base jumping career and especially base jumping is really tapped into that. I'm the one in control of my life. You know, I'm the one that's going to show up and do everything. And this kind of takes you away from being the victim, victimizer mm-hmm. that we talked about last time. Mm-hmm. But that turned into a lesson of navigation. And like after that, I was super navigation when jumping. You know, I did 1,000 jumps after that. Right. But yeah, I mean, that was a big lesson. I because I'm saying it, I tapped into it, and I led that to leaving home early, you know, and then being completely tested in the most extreme condition to be able to use it. Another
let me ask you something there. Yeah. So the plane has mechanical problems, it's stalling, it's spinning out, possibly you jump off, crash into the jungle, pretty much high speed, you bang up your body and your head, your foot is, you can't walk. And how long after that, you know, after you've come out the shock, if there was any shock that this just happened, how long after did it take for you to get into the acceptance, you know, the code of acceptance that we'll get into later on another episode, but I feel that's a big code for mm-hmm. sure, acceptance. Mm-hmm. So how long did it take you to get into acceptance? And then how long after acceptance did this farmer, did you run into the farmer?
Very good question, because I remember telling people I wasn't the same person I am now. This happened in 2015 or 16. So it was like 8 years ago, 7 years ago. But I remember exploring some of the things that I hold now in that time. And I remember thinking of like, nobody's going to find me. It wasn't like this complete acceptance clicked permanently. Okay. It was... Okay. The mind, you know, was going like, what if nobody finds me? I don't know where I'm going. What if I get an infection? Wow, that happened. I wonder if my friend's alive. Like, I'm super thirsty. It's hot. Like, when I got to some even ground, when I thought I was getting some trackway, I'd be like, man, that video is going to be cool. Like, just the monkey mind just going off. But yeah. I remember every time that I would veer off into like this daydreaming of probabilities that could happen, I guess you could say, I would remember this code of acceptance that I studied before, and I would bring myself back, and it would actually bring joy. It would actually bring, like you just said, appreciation, because I remember I was walking time. I remember when I actually would tap into this code that I would smile and I would appreciate, just not like, oh, I almost died. I appreciate life. Not that general.
Okay.
But I appreciated like moving. I appreciated the warmth of the sun, the ability to do these things. Like,
but you're still alive.
Yeah. And it was like, it made me appreciate just how cool life is and how beautiful life is in the smallest way, like how nature interacts. And, you know, I think the codes are also an antidote to fear, right?
Yes.
And I made it, I remember. And how long did it take after I did? The acceptance got better. And with that acceptance, it was almost like a door. It was like a key to a door of like full responsibility of every step I took. And right. I remember it was just, I was moving so slow because of my leg, and it wasn't like a flat ground. It was like weird rocky hills. I would half slide down and hurt myself and take steps. But I remember it was one step at a time. And I really learned this from my days of doing uncomfortable meditation, where I used to sit or lay on a cold concrete floor for like 4 to 6 hours. And I would focus on the pain that would be in my body or my back or something. And I would just focus on that feedback. And I remember doing that for about 4 or 5 hours. And I would get so deep into the presence of my body that I could almost maybe assume that I was feeling myself vibrate, like my cells vibrate. Mm-hmm. And I went back to the simplicity of like feeling my feet while I walk. And one of the best meditations, you know, sometimes you have to go and meditate. You know, people want to go practice meditation. I don't. And you know that about me. But I do practice like a walking meditation, you could say. Just like try to feel your feet and think at the same time. You know, it's impossible. So I went back to that. Felt one foot over the next. And in that present moment, I would enjoy. I wouldn't be thinking about, I enjoy life. I enjoy nature. I would just be experiencing it. Right. And then reflect on it after in that state. So it was an interesting frequency to find. And through that frequency, I was able to perform effectively in that moment by making one step at a time and also probably protecting my injury from getting worse in that step. And three and a half hours between where I crashed until the farmer found me is the time. Mm-hmm. So it's a long time for a step.
A long time.
A step. Yeah. 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 And I remember I actually saw the plane looking for me a couple times, and friends. And I remember the farmer was also a taxi driver, and he drove me back to the drop zone, and there was like military and police. They thought I died. And I have the video of me, like my shirt's all ripped up. I'm like, farmer had crutches. I'm on crutches. My legs are done. My head's bleeding. Like, and I walk in, I just like walk in and smile, and everyone's like, "You're alive." And I'm like, yeah. <Let's go. laughs> Wow. Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah. It was
a story.
Yeah, it was an interesting story for sure. I learned I think like it's funny, like when you say that the lessons and the life is temporary, and what I tune into is that I have a greater aspect of myself, or my soul is the driver, you know, and I have, you know, Ryan is the character in the game, and the soul is the player. And I'm learning to trust that aspect and fold that. One lesson leads to another lesson that leads to another lesson that leads to another lesson. And each lesson that I complete, it leads and gives me the skills to keep going into the next lesson that I desire. And now that I'm talking about this, the lesson, that is a big lesson for me in navigation, because you always have to know where the drop zone is. You always don't ever jump out over anywhere you don't want to land on. Like all of these things, like, in a plane, you know, you understand your how much range you have and fuel and all of this, but you're constantly thinking of navigation, and navigation is something we have to do in life as it unfolds unpredictably, right?
Yeah. So
we have to use our inner compass to be able to navigate, and along the way we discover and we navigate and we embody the lessons and the codes to unlock all these different lessons. So now that I'm talking about this and bring it up, it was a huge lesson for me to navigate. Like, and every now that's, I've actually, you know, I worked with two of my really close friends to jump and get them into wingsuits and base jumping. And I would nail in navigation to them. And I would be like, I'm not jumping, or if I'm tired, but I would have this discernment and experience that they, you couldn't talk me out of. Because in skydiving and stuff, a lot of people are like, just go, like, do this, let's do it, it's fun. It's called complacency.
Of course.
And like, what complacency, the problem with complacency is it comes, you notice you have it when it's too late.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it was able, navigation is, you know, that experience has helped me understand how to navigate life, you know, tune in, check.
Preparation.
You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Right. And it's, and going through these checklists of life, or, you know, or these experiences, just being prepared doesn't hurt, you know, it doesn't hurt, but the complacency of just, cause I remember that. I remember getting to a point of complacency. It was a combination of and I'm talking about piloting, you know, a combination of overconfidence and, you know, I got to a point where I was a super good pilot. I was like one with the machine, and I knew my routes like the back of my hand. I didn't have to, you know, do any flight planning, which is what they teach you in pilot school. Is you go through all these planning of the flight, and it could take, you know, hours to plan this flight before. So it's a lot of work. And I got to a point where I was just so confident in my abilities. You know, I was flying dozens of hours a week, and I would just hop in the plane. I wouldn't even have to plan anymore, you know? And then it's only when a situation comes up that you realize that you've been in complacency, and it's like, it's worth taking the time to plan. Even if things don't go according to plan, that's okay. But that attention, that energy that you put in beforehand, there could be a detail in there that really helps, you know, with the, whether it's like an alternative airport to land at, or, you know, certain frequencies to check. And there's so many things. So yeah, that's a lesson. Checking the plane for sure. Yeah,
checking your gear.
Checking your gear. Yeah. Batteries in your headset, these little things.
Little things, man. Yeah. Can lead to big problems, you know.
Lead to big problems for sure.
It comes to discipline at that point through experience. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Cause like there's, can be one little thing that goes wrong on the plane or in the parachute. And sure, you know the route and you're a really good pilot. You could probably figure it out, but like that's the, you know, life does that to you. You know, what is that?
Risk.
What is that phrase? Marlowe, is it?
Oh, I know which one you're trying. I know what you're thinking. Yeah.
If something can happen, it will.
I think that's it. Moore's Law.
That's
Moore's
it.
Law. Yeah.
Yeah. You can tell, guys, the listeners, we don't prepare for these podcasts.
Yeah. Sometimes I prepare a little bit. Yeah.
Not with the science stuff.
The science. That's true.
I think it would sound like cooler if we, you know, wrote down. Well, just I didn't know I was gonna bring that up. So
I think that's part of the flow of the podcast. Sometimes we don't know where it's gonna go. And we could always Google it, you know.
Yeah.
And that's okay. So you brought up a couple of things there, Ryan, when you're explaining all that, and it touched on what you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, that, you know, this is like a video game and it's kind of like in a video game, like the more you're prepared, or the more that you've played the video game, you get the skills better as we go. But what came up for me is like in a video game, the harder the video game or the more challenging the video game as it goes, like there's less room for error in the video game.
Right? It's like what they say in base jumping, like you start with a luck jar and you end with a skill jar.
Yeah, totally. That's what I feel like as well. Yeah.
Yeah, you just get better. Like what we talked about before, you just get better at the game. And if you don't get better at the game, you're going to create a lesson that's going to force you to get better. It's going to be such a big lesson. This is when people hit rock bottom. You know, I've lost everything before in my life. And, you know, that was a big lesson. You know, one time he's too confident, too complacent, investments, not paying attention, not having my disciplines, you know, and then there's consequences, but through those consequences, it's not the end. It's the beginning. It's the beginning of your bounce back or your return, or the beginning of a big, deep desire that you created to learn. Like, if you are complacent, it's because you didn't have the codes to an experience to prepare, to check the plane, to navigate, to do all of these things, which you learn from there. And this is how you unconsciously attract the lesson to you, because the more you, the law of consequence, you know, cause and effect, the more you ignore something, or the more that you respond or react to something, builds up this energetic in you that you start to attract the lesson. You don't learn the lesson. You don't learn the lesson. You get too complacent, which you're going off the balance. Right. And then, you know, one mistake kind of leads to the next, and it dominoes. And through that domino, you fall all the way down. You grab onto all your resources and this and that, but you don't have the codes to use the resources now, because you treat them the same as before. Mm-hmm. And then you get to this point where, when I did lose everything, I went back to when I left home at 15. And it allows you to see the people around you very well, how they respond, how they interact, what the truth is. And then you realize, like, you get to a point in a dark place where you realize all you have is you. Like, you have to make the first step. You have to do the work, you know, to take that trajectory in a new place, and it becomes a momentum. And I've had experiences like this, and, you know, very, very challenging ayahuasca ceremonies where it was really, really dark and really challenging, and like energy's moving and all of this. And there's this pinprick of light, pinprick. And you have to, like, nobody's coming to save you in there. It's just you. It's you. And and you have to find the codes. You have to find the codes. You have to find the tools that you already have to make that and expand it. And there was a whole entire ceremony. You have to expand that light, and you get to the other side, and you feel very proud and empowered and like from that journey. And, you know, that's after I lost everything, I went through that. And I remember listening to different people and trying different things. And then I tried to figure it out with the same thinking that got me into it. Like Einstein says, don't use the same thinking to get out of a problem that got you into it.
Right.
And, I would tap into this, tapped into source, man. And I tapped in, and the more I followed the path, the more creation that came in as a creator. And I started to create, and doors and in the universe, and the reality, this reality started to support me. And I actually became a professional race car driver after I lost everything. That was like the energy I used to slingshot myself through, but I had held all of these lessons, and which I was able to use, and I was ready for that. So yeah, I mean, that was another lesson, goes deep into that, but you keep it.
Yeah,
keep it.
That's the beauty of these lessons, is you keep them them as you go, and then you don't make the same mistakes. So then it opens up the doors to learn new lessons. But you're more capable and more equipped to handle them, God willing.
And having this like energy and having this I would say awareness or type of noticing in life, to notice when something comes up in life. One, you have created it or had a part in co-creating it. It's not there to hurt you. It's that the world is not here to get you. You know, you're not the victim of anything, but it showed up because this reality and this world loves you, and it wants you to go through this lesson. There's some greater aspect on the other side of this. And having this attitude, you know, and having this acceptance and being able to tune into things, not perfect, there's not an end to anything. There's no endedness to anything, but taking this clarity, like when something shows up, there's something I need to look at. There's something I need to feel that's uncomfortable. And like you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, like some people try to get away from the lessons and they just come back. It's like trying to get away from shadow. As you bring it up, you have to integrate shadow with, you know, with the new thing, tools you learn, but nobody really, you know, it's very noisy. Everyone's trying to teach things that worked for them. I notice a lot of people will try to micromanage their personalities instead of like tuning in to like accepting, like, you know, this is something I created and this is something I need to look at, and I need to release the energy. I need to, if I have an emotion come back, it's just like if I hit my foot and it hurts, you know, then I'm going to walk in a different place. If I'm sitting in a bad position and my back hurts, if I don't move, there's consequences to that. If I feel sadness, if I feel happiness, if I feel something, it's just feedback. Mm-hmm. And it, I need to feel it so that I know what to do. Mm-hmm. But if I'm not, if I'm trying to get away from my feelings, if I'm trying to, and this is not, I'm not saying like we need to feel and like indulge in our feelings and make them important.
Right.
It's as much as if I made that pain from my foot important.
I agree with that. It's just that, a feeling, but yeah. It does deserve, or it's meant to be felt, but not, don't create a story around it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, and I think that's, you know, some people are there right now. And it's okay, but try the other way. Just try it. Just try it. Like next time you feel sad, just feel sad and then be done with it and then adjust.
Yeah.
Just try it. And and people might be triggered by that. Well, if I'm sad, I need to think about it and understand why and tell this story of how I shouldn't be sad. And then the sadness is, you know, it's gotcha. You mm-hmm. know, it's like it, try that with pain, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I give you guys a good listeners, a fun exercise of, you know, being able to really be remove energies and be present and accept is when you get a mosquito bite, you know, accept it. Watch what you try to do to get rid of this mosquito. And the more you itch it, the more you itch the mosquito bite, the worse it gets. And, try ignoring it and then see where your mind goes. See your totally. Mind's hating. You can't change what happened.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I love the mosquito bite one analogy. Another one is like a wound. Like if you keep poking at the wound, you keep picking mm-hmm. at the scab, like it doesn't get better. It actually mm-hmm. just gets worse. So it's like, mm-hmm. just like, okay, I realize you have it, accept it, feel whatever emotion comes up from that. And then just let it go. Just, mm-hmm. just let it go. Mm-hmm. So simple. It's not necessarily easy for people, but it could be so simple.
Yeah, and with what you're saying, like when you have a cut or an injury that's healing, the body wants to heal, right?
Yeah.
It's like, so do you believe that you know, healing is a big word. It has an endedness to it, right? There is a beginning to the cut and an end to the cut, I guess. Right. But there's also a process in between, and you learn from the cut that you're not going to play with knives with anymore or whatever you got the cut from. But the body and the spirit and the mind and the heart and all these aspects, they are looking for a homeostasis. They are looking to like be at their top game all the time. Only we kind of get in the way with trying to micromanage like what we do naturally, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the second time you mentioned that micromanage your personality, Ryan. What's like an example of somebody micromanaging their personality?
This might get a little advanced.
It's okay.
Might be a little bit too advanced. A separation from, I think a little bit of a separation from understanding what an identity is might be a little place to start. An example of that is, when you talk to your mother, when you talk to your friends, when you talk right. to your business partners, when you talk to a baby, when you talk to the guy at the grocery store, you're all playing different characters. And each of these characters, you know, they have different qualities. They have different, it's like a video game. You pick the character, one has more
avatars,
strength, but he's slower. You know, the right. other one's faster, like Mario Kart, right? It's like, you know, you pick like, Bowser, he's strong but he's slow, and you pick Toad, it's the opposite, right? So you have these identities, and if you sometimes like with a loved one, you might get into a fight with a loved one, and the identity plays based on what you want and need and think is right and your perception, and then after that fight you wish you didn't say the things that you did, right?
Sure.
So there's all our identities have certain traits that they react and how we respond is when we move past the identity and we tap into the present moment where we observe and then we respond to that fight, but the identities react. So if our identities also have fear, right? They're scared of what could happen to them. And we can go back to the simplicity of ego, right? And I bet everyone has a simplistic understanding of what ego is. I don't like to use the word ego too much because it's overly programmed. The ego is, let's say, a sense of self. And somebody says you have a heavy ego. The ego's fears, the ego is an illusion, and it fears of being forgotten about. That's why the ego has a really bad relationship with the present moment, right? Because it doesn't exist there. It's an illusion. What is my name in the present moment? You have to remember it. The ego acts in past and future only. You have to think of yourself in past or future. If you're in the present moment, there is no name. There's nothing. So you have different personalities, different identities, right? And they all have been crafted and created. And sometimes when we get hurt in a relationship, as an example, we try to make our personality feel better, right? So we'll give it, we'll talk to it, you know, give it some, I don't want to trigger too much, but, you know, we'll try to make our personality that interacts with our loved ones and not with the boys, we'll try to micromanage its reactions, right? Instead of coming to the present moment and responding differently, right? Adjusting the outcome, you know, and that's, you know, some stuff that I teach in my courses. That's different mechanics, but that's what I mean. And it's like, it gives your power away when you're trying to micromanage a personality that's been crafted, you know, from your certain lessons and desires, maybe the soul wanted. Instead of releasing the energy and trying to respond instead of react, right? It becomes a gift to have these personalities, right? To have a sense of self, because we learn through them. These are our lesson creators, right? If we're in the present moment, you know, we need to be able to embody into the physical reality and project out lessons, project out our creations for us to experience them back, right? We project out a lesson because our personality, you know, is coded to that, you know, and then we embody the personality, you know, unconsciously, and we get feedback. You know, it's like there's a personality that wants to learn love when you're young. You know, between all the Disney movies and all the teachings and stuff from previous generations, love is a tough one in the movies and everything. And, you know, like we have these embodied personalities and they go into different relationships when you're young. And I mean, I'm not speaking for everyone. Some people meet their high school sweetheart and have beautiful relationships, but I went through a lot of relationships myself, you know, to learn love and what I thought love was in a relationship, and lust and all of these things. And that was my personality going through, and through those I learned lessons and I got codes and boom, 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 right? And I learned the hard way because I didn't tap in, you know, I didn't experience the present moment like I do now. But it you know, you try to micromanage, like after you get out of a relationship, you try to micromanage the personality that went through that, and make it feel better. Like don't be the victim. It was her fault or his fault. Next time I'm not dating them. And you make all these excuses up and stories and emotions. And, you know, at the end of the day, 5 years later, so I'm so glad I went through that. I'm so glad, like, it's a lesson in my life, right? So when we try to micromanage the personality, it's also an illusion. You know, it doesn't lead to growth. But at least the growth is adjusting the way that we respond to what we discover. Right? I discovered something in these relationships about myself, right? Maybe I had a worthiness problem. Maybe I had a trust problem, you know, and I attracted that relationship so that I could go through and learn. And I need to be able to sit through the uncomfortable emotions in order to embody what trust is and what, you know, worthiness is and these things. And I'm sure a lot of other people share this. And that is done through the personality, but at a higher aspect, at a more conscious level. And then life is temporary. We leave, but we you know, the aspect of us that does not die, you know, expands.
I agree. Okay, so I have a question here. It came up while you're sharing that. So let's say someone hypothetical person has a habit of micromanaging their personality, and they are constantly micromanaging this, and they'll do all these things and maybe self-sabotage unknowingly or knowingly. Maybe they do, you know, who knows what they do? Bad habits, bad choices, bad decisions, for the lack of a better word. Will they end up getting the lesson that they came here to get? Or by micromanaging it, does it actually take them off their path of receiving these lessons? Or does the lesson always come find a way to make itself known in this go around? Or will they just have to come back again, you know, reincarnate and then get those lessons? Or just came up to me now, do they miss the opportunity completely to get those lessons? And it's like, no, you don't get to reincarnate and do them. And you just totally missed out. What do you think on that? I know that's a deep question, but that's just what popped up.
No, great question. Both probabilities will be explored. So there'll be a probability where you do get the lesson right away, and there'll be a probability where you don't. And we're not really meant to. There's no such thing as when we're done. There's no endedness. There's no final lesson. You know, right. It's like, and I'm going to answer this. I know people get frustrated when I answer this way, but I'm going to answer this with just like an open perception of seeing it in a different way, right? If we are desiring to not repeat a lesson, we're desiring for an endedness that we don't even know exists yet, right? Sure. Like when people say, like, I can't wait till I become this, you know, that might not necessarily align with what they truly desire to learn. And mm-hmm. and then I challenge them, okay, what does that look like when you do learn trust? How does your life look like? What is it? Who around you? Do people act different? Do you buy different things? Do you say different things? Do your habits change? Like, do you think different? Like, can you imagine, like, right now, like, what does that feel like? Mm-hmm. Right. And some big lessons, some greater lessons sometimes take years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years. But those lessons are this massive embodiment that now is passed down. And I think life is also about passing the torch, because we're humanity, right? So as we learn the lessons at whatever pace, whether it takes one year to 20 years, people tune into us like tending our own garden. They tune into us, whether we're struggling and we're getting in our own way, or we're starting to open up and see that, you know, it goes down to the codes of taking responsibility and for what you create in front of you. It's the simplest thing. And
right,
instead of trying to finish the lesson or not repeat it, you instead change the energetic and say, I created the lesson. That's the first step. Mm-hmm. I created the lesson. Now what? Right. Because you've taken your power back, you now are in this energetic that you can respond to it instead of react to it. Right. And we're not chasing life anymore. So this is like what I get into about, even multidimensionality is a big word, but being able to interact outside of just linear perception and feedback, but being able to also have a good relationship with the present moment and be able to navigate how we react or how we respond to something, right? Mm-hmm. And life unfolds unpredictably. So if you react to something, it's not wrong.
Right.
It just unfolds something new.
Sure. Right?
So you always have the opportunity to respond. There's never an end. There's never there's never a wrong path you can take. There is never a wrong choice you can make in life. The code is to be able to respond, to realize that you're not giving your power away as soon as you stop playing the victim, right?
Right.
It's like, I created this. Something bad happened to me. Somebody hit my car. I'm, you know, partially responsible for that, you know? It's just, even in any situation, you know, the blame never leads to anything.
Right.
It's like a compressed energy, right? And it doesn't matter who's right or wrong. But there's consequences. You can respond to it by applying consequences to that person, right? Mm-hmm. Like get their insurance, or if they hurt your child, like you can respond to it, right?
Right.
And that's a difficult thing for where our species is right now, because we've been trained to be the victim our entire lives. Every movie, every conditioning, everything, you know. So it's really like the hats off to the people that are doing this work, because it is very, you know, challenging to do this work and then stay there.
Yeah.
But I think like the master codes are really like making a good relationship with the present moment, you know, not finding endedness in anything.
I agree with that completely. But I just want to hone in on this for a sec. I'll start with this question. Do you think we come into this human experience with a predetermined list, possibly short list of lessons that we came here to learn on like a soul contract?
Absolutely.
Or, okay, so that's a yes.
Partially.
And exactly this is where I was going with it. And our avatar personality also co-creates lessons for us to learn along the way by its decisions or its choices. Is that where you're going with it?
Yeah, I would say like we're getting into some a little bit more advanced mechanics, right?
Yeah.
The birthing process, right? And I don't want to tap into too much of this because it's like
deep.
It's deep, and it's really like, you know, if you want to learn something, you got to explore it. Nobody knows, you know. Let's say as a thought experiment, just my perception, guys, you know, you can explore this, you can add to it, you can create your own. It's really up to anyone. But in the process, there's obviously like we have our family lineage, right? We have our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our great-great-great-grandparents. And that's special. Like the lineage is passed down. And like, I'm gonna push in a little story now to show how important that is. It's my grandfather went to the war in Germany, and he was in the war with his platoon. I think he was only 17 or 18 years old, and they had to go to Normandy. You know the beach of Normandy where they stormed the beach of Normandy the next day. And he was delivering a message on a motorcycle, and he crashed on a bridge the day before. Broke his leg, and they sent him home. The next day, his entire platoon was killed, all of them, 69 of them. If that incident didn't happen, like that, I wouldn't be here. My son would be here, you know? So there's a long lineage of like lessons and guidance through family lines that come down in the physical form. Mm-hmm. And then I don't want to tap into this too much, but there's, you could say, a soul level. Right? A soul family level or aspect to it between the both. So there's a physical aspect, and then you could say, let's say for a thought experiment, we do reincarnate, and then we do learn the lessons, and that obviously collects into a greater cloud. We could say it like the apple cloud of our experiences and lessons. that's there too as an influence. So there's a genetic lineage influence, and then you could say there's our soul cloud for fun influence, and there's the soul cloud, you could say, is always expanding, it's always learning, right? And then the physical aspect is also a part of it. So there are lessons through ancestors that are collected, this cloud that want to be completed, that do show up in our lives. And there are also family lessons that get passed down through people say trauma, right? So if my grandmother had a trust issue when she had my mother, you know, she would imprint that onto her. Not as like family trauma is bad, even though it can be dark for some people. They have, you could say, they have like a very heavy burden for that soul family to learn that lesson and complete it, and they've chosen that. But it gets passed on to a mother. It gets imprinted and then reinforced by the unconscious personalities during the growth in the first 7 years of life in a theta state of a child. It gets imprinted, and that child starts to experience and attract these things through the templates. And then it's an opportunity for that child to correct or release that energy or clear it so that it, that lineage can continue to expand and grow and learn lessons, because the path work is always continuing.
Right.
And then there's like, you know, you're young and you run into a door, or you hurt your foot, and like your father or mother or friend interacted in a certain way. They weren't there for you, or you learned to fear, or there was an emptiness there. There wasn't a response based on like another codex there, which creates a new template, right? So there's a lot of templates that are put in through the soul cloud, call it for fun. This is a thought experiment, guys, you know, through lineage, right? Through genetics. Mm-hmm. And then there's things that we learn from events in our life, right? Mm-hmm. We might get hurt in a relationship, and that actually creates us to like not trust. We weren't mm-hmm. even there from it, right? And then we have that template to go and explore. Mm-hmm. Right. So we're always picking these things up. That's why there's no endedness. Like it's, as a human, we're always exploring and discovering, and there's no, like, the nirvana or enlightenment is when you become aware and responsible for what you create, and you adjust it as it goes, and continue on with a smile on your face, like through life.
Right. Right.
Like, anyways, that's a little summary and of the way that I experience it personally, you know.
Sure.
And it's up to anyone else to explore that if they want, you know, explore the idea.
So I love that. That was beautifully said. I want to just prod a little bit. So let's say soul comes in with the contract or agreement that it's here to learn the lesson of courage, for example, or bravery, or something like this on a, you know, a level where it's somewhat heroic, so to speak. And I'm just giving, this is just a random example. And then this person, this human, through programming and, you know, for whether it's circumstantial or not, just micromanages themselves in a lousy way. And they, you know, when things come up in life, they choose to resort to substance abuse, or they choose to watch TV and just zone out, you know, and they just are a couch potato, or they're super lazy, or they don't really do anything. They don't really surmount to anything. They don't really respond well, and they just numb themselves, and they just, you know, live a life of mediocrity. And they never fulfill that lesson that they came to do of bravery or courage, because they just micromanage themselves in an unhealthy way, so to speak. And then they pass away, you know, like they something happens, they pass away, whatever it is. What do you think happens in that case, Ryan? Do they come back like with a vengeance on the next one and be like, okay, like, it's a lot more, their circumstances are now in a situation where they have to be heroic and bravery and courage, or do they just, they miss the boat on that soul contract and now it's repercussions? What do you think?
I would say, excuse me, I would say that one of the beauties of this video game is free will choice.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's really something that we all are very attuned to, is free will. So that individual in this incarnation has a free will choice to explore like not fulfilling and the consequences of not fulfilling it. And this could be a contract, you know, a predetermined soul contract to affect the people around that person, to respond or react to that person, to give them certain amount of codes, right, to help them fulfill their contracts at that time. Excuse me, guys. But there is another probability that is being explored where that person did fulfill that contract, but both need to be explored, right? And this gets a little bit more in depth. We're getting deep into this one. So time linear, right? Time, the perception of time is linear But time is, you know, maybe time is a tapestry, right? Maybe my childhood is existing the same time that we're talking right now, just in a different angular rotation, just in a different place, right?
True.
And one of the things as a father that I do now, when I perceive things, is I was talking to a friend about this today, and it's the same on topic. Before I became a father, I was really chasing things. I was chasing opportunities. And he doesn't understand. He's not a father. He's doing a lot of things I used to do, wingsuit, base jump, business.
Thrill-seeking.
Thrill-seeking. Well, base jumping, you know, wasn't thrill-seeking for me. It was it was a mastery at something that was really high level.
Okay.
He's very successful, you know, does a lot of stuff. And when I talk to him about being a father, they don't understand, because I used to be like them, and then I went, became a father, and I'm like, I choose differently. So my choices now reflect in the same timeline of my son when he's 45, or my great grandson. So if I put some Bitcoin away for my great grandson and I write him a letter, I imagine that he's reading it. Every word that I put down is the same speed that he's reading it at the same timeline. So every choice that I make now affects a probable path in the future that's connected. Instead of it starting and ending, because we all know that starting and ending does not exist. It's something, it's an aspect of the mind, so that we can explore this reality through a perception of time, a start and end, which is done through the mind, right? But in the present moment, it's not done. And this is the level that allows us to explore lessons, finishing, starting, the perception of these things. So when we're exploring probabilities, when you make a choice to do something, and then you wonder, like, I wonder what it would have been like if I didn't make this choice and I did something else. The fact that you're exploring that with your consciousness means that it's already been explored on a different energetic level. You don't need to explore it anymore, and that you can move on. So because we have free will choice, and this person doesn't have the abilities, maybe he wasn't given the right tools. It's kind of like life unfolds unpredictably, and you have the best tools, but there's no, the winning at the end is a perception. Because if you've ever won something, I've won competitions, and the path to winning is more exciting than the actual after winning, because there's another,
right? It's the journey,
right? But this is where a lot of ideas, perceptions, teachings, things you need to navigate. For the person that doesn't eventually do that, we are speculating, because they might finally learn the lesson on their deathbed, you know, or that is their lesson, right? We don't know, right? But you're always, there's a rule, you're always going to experience what the soul wants, not what the personality wants.
Right.
Like, if you want to get into a relationship to find love, but the soul really desires for you to find worthiness, you're going to create every scenario possible to find the worthiness when your personality thinks it's trying to find love.
Right.
But they both play a part, because the personality got you there. You know, it leads you into the situation, right? It leads you into the event.
Yeah.
But the soul is the driver. It's the player. It's the person in the video game driving the video game character. And when the video game character kind of tunes into that, that's when things really happen really well. And it's a very powerful thing.
Would you say that is a good way, or what is a good way for a human being, for someone out there, one of the listeners, to figure out what their lesson that they came here to learn is? Like,
yes, I have a good one for that.
Nice.
Yes. First of all, like, get out of your own way, right? Take an action, take a step, and wait for feedback and adjust. And the more you do this, the closer you get to understanding what you're doing, and you become more of a participant in finding that lesson. But on the way to finding that lesson, you can't just solve the lesson of worthiness. You need to learn how to hold it and embody it. And by embodying something, you need to build the skill set through a proof of work, through experience, in order to hold this embodiment of worthiness or trust. You need to go through the lesson and find the breadcrumbs along the way until you get it. And each breadcrumb that you pick up becomes the embodiment of the lesson. Mm. Right. So there's no, you learn it as you go. The trick is whether you are a participant in it or you find out after. Mm. Right.
Yeah. So you're kind of, you're building the plane as you're flying it. And all of a sudden you're a fully operational machine.
Kind of, with the plane.
I'm oversimplifying.
Try both. That's what I say to people is like, you take these perceptions, right? And then just play with them. Try it. Try, mm-hmm. Try the personality. It's interesting now we're talking about the personality and the soul, because the personality, the personality trying to find the soul's desire, right? It's mm-hmm. kind of like the player puts it in the video game, and the character's trying to find the desire is the whole point of the game. It's the whole point of life, The whole point of life is you picking up the breadcrumbs to try to find the desire. That's the human experience. And like, if you're skipping that, you're looking for an endedness. You're looking to get away from how you're feeling now in a different way. There's bad feelings, there's good feelings, but it goes back to cheating. I've played Grand Theft Auto when I was young, and I just ran around and got all the codes, and I got bored of it very quickly.
Right.
But if you play the mission, like The Legend of Zelda or whatever game, if you play the mission without the cheat codes, it's much more
fulfilling.
It's much more fulfilling is a perfect word. It's the human experience. And like, the trick is that the mind is taught to want the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the actions and the embodiment and the experience and the discernment and the attitude and the trust and every lesson that we're saying here is the opposite energetic. Those mm-hmm. are the hosting energetics of mm-hmm. what it takes to explore, experience, discover, and adjust the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite is the victim, victimizer, right? The opposite is the reaction. The opposite is that. And that keeps you locked in the thinking aspect. It keeps you locked in into the what if aspect. It keeps you away from yourself. It keeps you locked into that personality.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we need it. We need the personality, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we're now operating with a perception of more than one aspect of ourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're exploring it in that sense. And this is multidimensionality. It's not some like super human power. It's being able to notice how you feel physically when something happens and when somebody says something, and also like listen to them and use your five senses,
mm-hmm.
and understand the story that you tell yourself. That's multidimensionality. That's you're not grasping those. You're sensing them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like this stuff flows over from the begin course, obviously, but it's like, what are we here to do? We're here to learn lessons, and we're here to explore the human experience, we're here. And then the natural aspect of that is to pass it on, like Spade did.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't, like Spade doesn't have to be a perfect human in order to teach others.
Yeah, he was definitely not perfect, that's for sure.
Yeah,
but he embodied the imperfection so well.
And you tuned into, you have a choice to tune into both, mm-hmm. right? And this is something that attitude and awareness actually brings over time, is nobody, like, you're still human. We're still human. There's no, we look up to these special people all the time, but we don't understand, like, they also have aspects of themselves that are still exploring and learning lessons, like...
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Even the more lessons they learn and the more aware I become of the human spirits, the more challenging the lessons get. They still come.
Of course.
But they're coming to teach me to be good at exploring the human experience, to be a more embodied human, mm-hmm. Of being able to tap into my tools, being able to respond, being able to do these things, and also being able to fail, also being able to not respond and not react. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And then there's a trick that's put into our mind of endedness. when am I going to do this enough to be at a certain level? And it takes us out of our attention, right? And it's like that, something to practice. There's no end. How does that feel? How does it feel when you say there's no end? I'm just consistently exploring. You imagine that you wouldn't even know that you were dead until you were dead. If you never, you know, knew about an end, you know, how much more attention you would save, you know, attention that you could put into things and create them. We're creators here. I've said this before. I believe that we're creators, you know, we're here to create.
Yeah. Well, this, like they say, God made us in his image and he's the creator. So that rings true.
Yeah.
All right. We're almost out of time here, Ryan. This was a good one. This was a deep one. I feel like it's a good entry point into how deep these podcasts are going to go. Just in closing, in one sentence, can you share one of your favorite lessons from the last year? So in, you know, 41 or 40-year-old Ryan, in just one sentence, what's a good lesson that you've learned in the last year? And then I'll go and do the same.
What's coming up is patience. You know, I had a level of really good patience before, but I'm at a level where I'm enjoying patience. Like you just, you see so much more unfold from the place you are rather than trying to go to the place you're wanting to be. So you see, I don't know. That's what came to me. I didn't expect it, but that's
patience is clutch for sure. Yeah, I'll just go with the first one that came up for me, whether it was the best or not, I don't know, but there are no shortcuts. You can try to take the shortcut, but it's just going to end up bringing you back around to the path that you're meant to take.
Yeah. That's, I learned that one too a long time ago.
There you go.
Yeah. Nice. And then that's such a good one because then when you're aligned with what you're building and what you're doing and like what you're interacting with and the attention you're putting in your life, then the shortcuts become like something you don't want to experience.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's a natural process of that lesson is like, then you really, your attention is your currency.
Yeah.
Like where your attention flows, energy goes. That is the currency. It's not money. It's not even like Bitcoin. It's not Bitcoin either. It's your attention. And everyone's 100%. Trying to, if you take your attention away from something, it loses its like, you know, quality.
Yeah.
Right. And like when you pour your attention into something, it grows, and this is where you become a creator. So shortcuts actually like take your ability to be a creator away. They both go together, patience and no shortcuts, exactly like aligned, man. It's perfect. I love it.
It was perfect.
Inflow.
I love it. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more codes.
Nice. Thanks guys.
Thank you.